Okay, today is Erev Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a miraculous day. And maybe just a quick story about Rab Shimon Bar Yochai. There was a community of people that needed rain. Rain was mamish, basic parnasa. Without rain, then meant people went hungry, God forbid. And so it's written that Rabbi Yossi, I forgot who else, came with him. And when they approached him, without even saying what the need is, him sensing that they're coming to him not to learn Torah, he opened up quoting the pasuk, Hine matoiv umanoim sheves achem gam yochad, how good and how pleasant is it when brothers are sitting together. And he gave a very deep teaching on that verse. And the rains came. So I'm going to make a little suggestion at the end of the class, perhaps understanding a bit deeper about what happened. And just to give a bracha to all of us that Lag BaOmer is a day of miracles, not only by the Rashbi, but by the Rebbe. When people needed the miracle, Lag BaOmer was the date. A miracle. The biggest miracle would be for people who don't have children. Some of these people were, by the laws of nature, unable to have children. Even bigger than Parnassa, for sure for Parnassa. So Hashem should bless all of us that we should somehow be privileged to tap into this and get all of our needs fulfilled. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. So there's a pasuk in this week's parsha that reads, V'chi yamoch achicha, that if your brother becomes poor, umata yadai means he's unable to support himself. It's an unusual expression. Imach means he's with you, he's amongst you. So the Torah says, vehechazakta boy, you should hold on to him, help him. And the way Rashi explains, don't allow your brother to fall. And as we all know in life, that once we fall, going from there back up is much harder than if there would have been someone stepping in earlier, preventing the fall to happen. So having the foresight of not allowing your brother to fully fall, v'hechazakta boy, you should grab onto him, whether he's a ger, whether he's a toishav, and v'chai imach, and like this, you will live together, or he will live with you. And the challenge with this verse is the word imach. It could have said, v'chi yamoch achicha, if your brother will become impoverished, umata yodei, he'll be unable to support himself. So God is commanding us, v'hechazakta boy, hold on to him. Help him. Help him before he really needs help. What's the imach? So there's many approaches. There's a beautiful classic approach. Beautiful because we are familiar with a statement that many of us make every day or a couple of times a week, and there's a question on it, and it's good to know the answer. The statement that we make is that when we bench, meaning after we eat bread, and we articulate the way of thanking God beyond thank you is great, right? Thank you, Hashem. But Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote the text of the first blessing. And we begin by saying, Hazon es ha'olam kuloi, that God sustains the entire world. And he does it betuvai, he does it with his goodness, etc., etc. And the question is, it's not true. Is the whole world being fed by God? How would you answer that question?
Yes.
Yeah, many people don't have what to eat. So the classic answer is that Hazon es ha'olam kuloi, which means that when God gives sustenance, he gives it for the whole world as a collective. It doesn't mean that everyone right away gets what they need. It will mean, actually, no one has what they need. Everyone has what they need, plus the plus is to share with the other. The other person has other things in plus to share with the other. And only when we when we share what we could, will people not go hungry? But there is always enough food in the world to feed the entire world. And by the way, now we know that, mamash. No matter how great or terrible a drought is in one location, you know how much grain is thrown away every year on purpose to keep the prices the way they are? It's like unbelievable. In other words, there is mamash, there is enough food. God is on es ha'olam kulay. So coming back to this verse, that when you are helping your brother, don't think that all what's happening is that you're sharing, you're the giver and the other one is the receiver. That's not all what's happening. Yeah, in this specific area, you're the giver, he's the receiver, but he's with you, you're with him. Don't make yourself superior to him, because in many other areas, whether it's now, whether it happened, whether it will happen, that person will have something that you need. As we all know. Okay, that's a beautiful pshat. I wanna right away dive into something much deeper. And I shared a story 2 weeks ago, or a week and some ago in Shul. I want to share it again, because I'm trying to understand it better. It's a beautiful story. It's a story that Rabbi Manas Friedman shares on occasion, because he says that this was the most inspiring story that he was ever part of. That's a great statement from a great man that was part of a lot of things happening. And this happened a while back. He was asked to speak in Buenos Aires. He lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota. At that time, I'm just saying this on the side, someone told me that first class is made for uber wealthy people and for all the schnutters. I'm saying this because that's exactly who you find in first class or in business class. You find very, very wealthy people and the biggest schnurs. In that category, all of the fundraisers and the rabbis will be in business class. It's very funny. I'm saying all that because they didn't give him a business class ticket then. So he flew, and he says he hates flying. He's a bad traveler. Compounded with, it was a stopover flight. You're laughing. I don't know how true this is. It's gonna irritate you. You're gonna be a hardworking person. You're gonna walk on a plane, and who's sitting in the front? The schnutters and the wealthy. All right, I'm sorry, guys. That's the way it is. Who's playing? That's you. You are. That's the joke. But that became the minute that all of these people that are so-called, you know, the world traveler speakers. They go on business, they get paid. Okay. So anyway, it didn't look like he had a good flight. He did not go on business class, and it was a stopover, and he's a bad flyer to begin with. And he 19-hour the trip, and he got there, he says he was drained. A person is a human being. He was mamash. He said, I was looking forward going to my hotel, taking a shower, laying down, getting myself together. And the guy, a young guy, is driving him, and he notifies him. He tells them that 6 months ago, there was a tragedy. And there was a group of teenagers or young men that were traveling somewhere, and the car got into an accident, and one 19-year-old got killed. Everyone else made it. One young man got killed, and his mother went into such a deep depression that for 6 months, he's telling this to Rabbi Friedman, she is in her apartment. People live there in an apartment. She's in her home, and she's refusing to get help. She's refusing to receive help, and people don't know what to do. And then he notified him, and therefore, on the way to the hotel, we're stopping over for you to speak to her. And he was for sure younger then, because what an adult person should do if they feel like they're being asked to do something that they don't want to do is that they should speak up for themselves, because if you won't speak up for yourself, no one will. He didn't know how to do that then. But he did it in his mind, which is what people do when we're younger. So he protested in himself. He says, what chutzpah that this guy has, that I just landed, he's not giving me a breather. What does he even know how much I need just to check in? And he didn't even ask me. And he had that in his head, and that's it. And, you know, you sit with these beautiful thoughts like we all do. So it was like percolating. And he was taken to that apartment. And this is more or less the way he shares it. He walked in there. He says it was so dark in there. She had the shades down. And it wasn't only physically dark. He says he felt death. He felt depression. When you are around depressed people, you can know she was in deep depression. And the first thing he did with her is that he asked her to speak about her son. And oh boy, you can just imagine how much she spoke up. After death, we all do this. We all do this. We invent new people. I'm not saying that that was her case, but that's a human tendency, which is to our detriment, that we forget the challenge and we create a new person. And then we have a relationship with a new person that never existed. And so she began to speak about the awesomeness of her son. Because really, that makes the tragedy greater, right? Of course. And she spoke and she spoke and she spoke. And how all the other kids survived. Think about that. Not that it would have helped her, but like everyone else survived and her son died. So he tells her in response, and he's a wise man. He did it at the right time. He really listened to her. And he says, hearing about the greatness of your son, imagine if, he tells her, if prior to him being born, us believing that the time that we are here in this world is predetermined, that means that he was destined to be here for 19 years. What if God would have come to you? You wouldn't have known him yet, but God would have described the greatness of this neshama. That such a person that has this quality and that quality, and he repeated the greatness of her son. If God would have asked you, can you be that person's mother for 19 years? Knowing it's only for 19 years. What would you say if he would have asked you? And he says he was certain that she would say, if I would have known, I would have said yes. And what came out of her mouth was, to her shock herself, with a lot of emotion, if God would have asked me, I would have said absolutely no, she said. With emotion. So he responds to her with emotion. This is flowing, not premeditated. Well, it's good that God didn't ask you. And when he said that to her, she broke down. By the way, when you're very, very depressed, breaking down is great. Because she couldn't even cry. She was dead. He says that she cried in 30 minutes what people cry in 6 months. And he witnessed physically her coming back to life. He says color came back to her face. And he witnessed Tchiyas HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead. And he says until today, this was the most awesome, inspiring experience that he was part of. Then he says he walked out of the apartment. He went back into his car. And then he continued the conversation where he left off with himself in his mind with the other guy. What did I tell myself before I entered? That he should have asked me. And if he would have asked me like a man should have, can you do this now? Can you do it later? I would do it. Why now? I would have told him absolutely no. He had the same words. And now I know that would have been the wrong answer. Oh. It would have been the wrong answer. So then he used his own line. It's good that you didn't ask. It's good that I wasn't asked. I would have given the wrong answer. That's the story. Now I'm trying to understand, how did that bring her back to life? What exactly happened over there? Because she heard herself say, absolutely not. And then she saw how wrong it is to say that. Like, what? There was a big change in her. What did it? Not that we know. I'm just trying to understand what could it have been.
Seeing the self-centeredness of St. Jerome.
I think the loss of control of the situation. She had no control.
Accepting the demon.
You give it up to God.
What? 1 second. And what demon?
Her truth. Her feelings.
Okay. So I, when I was speaking this to like a Shabbos last week, not this last week, yeah, I was saying that it wasn't even true. She would have said yes. She needed to see how her depression is distorting, making her think that she is someone who she's not. She needed to see something. I think it's, I agree with you now. There was a part in this woman that Taka would have said absolutely not. And at the same time, there is another part in her that would have said absolutely yes. And this is very important. And let me use this not only as a metaphor, but it's deeper than a metaphor because we all originate from, and this is something that we speak about on occasion. It's something that Chassidus mentions very often, that when God created man, man doesn't mean gender man. It means the human being. When God created Adam, so we accept, al pi Kabbalah, following the Rashbi, there are two opinions in the Gemara. How did we go from Adam to Adam and Chava? And according to the Torah of truth, what happened is that both man and woman, biologically, physically, were created fully formed from the outset, but they were stuck to each other someplace in the spinal cord. That means that they were back to back, achar achar. And what happened from there was that when Adam was put to sleep, Adam then would mean that being. Can you imagine? So it's not only a Siamese twins, it's much more than that, because it's a fully formed body. It's not two heads and two hands only. No, it's two completely separate people, but they're stuck to each other back to back. Very significant this. What God did is that he separated them. So there was a disentanglement, but that allowed them for the first time to face each other face to face. And I want to go to the opposite parts that we have within us, which we all have. So I want to use this just as an example, with the greatest respect to this woman, and to hold with the tragedy that she underwent and the recovery that she underwent. Doesn't matter who brought it about. She did it. Hashem did it, but she did it. They worked together through the shliach. Only when my opposite parts face each other does something amazing happen. Does a transformation happen? Does a resurrection happen? And without a lot of effort, the opposites within the person will never face each other. That's universal. That means that when you are in the mood of, when you are in the place of, let's say, being loving and being kind, you don't see at that moment, you don't really see the opposite that you have in you. Your cruelty, your nastiness, whatever everyone should describe. And first of all, it's very difficult for a person to see their flaw. Very difficult. And even if we see it, we don't see it to its real depth, which is horrible. We can't. It's too much. And even when we see it, we don't hold on to that. And we're really either or. It doesn't matter how. You can be 99% nice, and you can be one. It doesn't matter. The percent is irrelevant when we are talking on this deep level. We have both opposites. And I'm going to call them brothers, this verse. Because they're brothers. It's like Adam and Chava. Like they're a couple. They're coupled. And the reason why Adam and Chava were created back to back is because, not even side by side, back to back, because without an effort to disentangle and to face, we don't see each other. And even if we see, we acknowledge, yeah, that why I was in a bad mood. Okay, I'm in a good mood, I'm in a bad mood. You're not in a good mood and a bad mood at the same time. It's impossible. You are in whichever mood you are in. But you can see, if you can only see yourself in your full glory when you're in a good, and see equal when you are in your bad mood, so to say, if you can see both, then they are facing each other. That's called facing each other. And just see that deeply.
Seeing is understanding. Seeing is recognizing.
Seeing is seeing beyond your understanding. If it's understanding, the understanding has a tendency of ruining everything. Of seeing, feeling, knowing. being aware of at the same time, both holding opposites at the same time, not opposites in the world, my opposites, not made up, exactly the way it is. I think a part in this woman would say absolutely yes, would say that, which is what he brought out. And good God, I didn't ask you. But then she told herself, I would have said yes. But then she realized, and a part of me would have said no. So you meant by seeing her demon. In other words, a part of her, Taka would have said no. That's what. But only part of her, another part of her would have said, of course, how can I have ever lived without having my son? She cannot say goodbye to him. She can't be without him. Of course she would say yes. And of course she would say no. If you can see yourself saying yes and no at the same time, how amazing would that be? And I really think that when a person does that, miracles happen to the person. But it's very difficult to do. I can know myself when I'm in this place. I can know myself when I'm in that place. I can understand in my mind that really it's only me. There's only one person. I can understand that. But somehow there's some type of seeing that people have to schwitz for by first seeing how opposites they are. How they don't want to see each other. They don't want to see each other. Even when someone else sees my dark side, there's so much resistance. I don't even want for you to see it. And why would I care if you see it? Gesundheit, hey, doesn't bother me. See what you know. Because I don't want to see it. I don't want for it to be seen. And whatever it is that we're seeing, I think, unless we really become wise and strong, we're not seeing the half of it. In both directions. No one sees the potential greatness that they have, and no one sees the opposite that they have. It's very difficult, but the more we can get there, not make it up, not superimpose it, not fantasize of who I am when I'm not, but taka me. It's easy when people, it's easier when a person is very volatile. I think it makes it easier. I mean, some people, they go quick from one mood into the opposite mood. Whoever's laughing is that person. I'm for sure laughing. I have that. I can go very quick from one into the other, just like that. So there's a curse to that. There's certainly for the people around you, it's a curse because you don't know who you're dealing with. But you can see it quicker. Like, whoa, I was just in that great place. And just like that, all of us are switch. We all have it. Some people have it more than others.
There's a positive to that too, I feel like.
The positive is that we can see it. And what else?
You can become happy and normal again.
Faster.
Correct. Yeah, there's a positive to everything. There's a negative to everything. And to see that. But to see the positive idea or the negative idea won't do anything other than just exercising the brain. We have enough brain exercise. We are smart people. We are lacking. Our generation is not lacking understanding. Of course, we have to understand. We're lacking understanding, but our growth is not in the understanding. The barrier between the head and the heart, that's the final redemption, that everyone has to take what they know and integrate it. And how do you integrate it? Part of it is by seeing the opposites. Seeing the opposites brings a divine integration. And perhaps that's the meaning, that's the real meaning of the pasuk. That kiyamech achicha means that every person has an impoverished side, brother in them, imach. There is the brother that has it, the one, the part of me that knows it, that has it, that can do it. And then there is the one in me that's collapsing. So if imach, if I keep them together, then it won't fall down. They help each other. They help each other both by not allowing the bad side fully come out. It's there, but it's contained by the good side. So there's a containment. It goes both ways. It doesn't only limit the bad. It doesn't allow the good to become otherworldly. People think that's a real spiritual experience. I had this amazing experience. I spoke about this other times. That when the two parts of the person are not connected, both of them get out of control. And going, the heavenly also gets out of control. Meaning, in this world, we're not meant to be too heavenly. We're meant to come back. We're meant to be grounded. We don't advocate all of these meditative trips in which you're going to spend 3 hours and you're going to go in your brain to the world of Atzilus. We don't. That's not part of Yiddishkeit. We don't have that. Everything is very grounded. Even when you are in Shmoneh Esrei, you're talking about Parnassa. What are you talking about? You're talking about, I mentioned last week, the Kohen Gadol in the Holy of Holies. On Yom Kippur is asking God that Jews should make a good living. You can think you're crazy. You're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim once a year. That's what you're talking about. Parnasa. The answer is Dafke in their talk about Parnasa. Not to go too far to the heavens. So the part that's lowly, the part that's down, the dark part helps the good part not go out of control. And the good part doesn't allow for the bad part to fully express itself, only if Ataka sees what it could be. If you don't see it in its entirety, that part, the worst part, will come out somewhere. Because the good part is not seeing it. It's like many times when the parent is looking at the child, if the right person is looking at me, someone who cares for me, just them seeing me will contain me. A chassid always felt that with the Rebbe. That I can tell you my experience. The Rebbe saw me. And you knew when the Rebbe saw me, you felt it. The Rebbe was not just seeing your wonderful side. You felt it. The Rebbe saw me. The good, the bad, everything. Just that brings a miracle. At least he saw both sides. Halavai, I can see both of my sides. So maybe that's the imach. And I think that was the story of Rab Shimon Bar Yochai. Of course, externally means that how pleasant, how good and how pleasant is it when siblings get along. You know, people here who have children, as life goes on, it's a lot easier when they're young, even though when they're very young, many times they fight. But I'm presuming that most of us, the kids, the siblings, what happens to many, many families when they get older? I mean, every family has their own wiring, and it's harder to break out of it from the parts that are not okay, is that how close do siblings remain later in life? I don't know. I'm not talking about the closeness that one might have when their siblings live across the ocean. That's fake closeness. That's a fantasy closeness. But when they actually live on the same block, and they get on each other's nerves. Like, how does that work? So how great, how great and how pleasant when the siblings get along. The pnimius, I think it means something much deeper. It means that when something inside us, the siblings, dafka refer to the fighting siblings, to the opposition within me, to my split, that when they getting along, doesn't mean getting along. It says sheves achim. They should sit together. They should be together. Just stay in the same room. This is both good and pleasant. It brings a new goodness and it brings a pleasantness. And I think it brings a bracha. That's what happened with this miracle story. And Pasha, the rains fell. Perhaps because he was going deeper. Deeper always means going from the external into the internal. Everything you read in the Chumash, it works. I'm in this universe. If everything we learn about the other, you bring into yourself, it's going to fit perfect. Don't let your brother falter. Hold on to him. It means don't let yourself falter. Hold on. Holding on, in my understanding, is just seeing each other. And if not, he's going to fall. He won't be contained. And the other brother will also not fall. He's going to go on one of these balloons, and he's going to go out into who you'll die. The atmosphere only goes up that high. You can't go up forever. You have to be where they have weights. I don't know if you're one of those, what's called hot air balloons. Hot air balloon is scary because You're going, what do you mean going to the heaven? Like, well, you're nuts. Don't go to the heaven. You'll die. Beruchnius, it also means that way. That took me a long time to figure out because I always thought, what are you talking about? You know, these great men and women, that mamish, that they, holy people. That's a very unhealthy way of understanding holiness. The Rebbe is a holy person. The Rebbe was very, very well balanced. There was, in my time, there was a family from Manchester called Jaffe. I knew one of, I know many of his children, but one of them was a classmate of mine for many years. And he told me, I don't know if he became a Baal Tshuva or if he became Lubavitch from non-Lubavitch. I don't know which one, but he asked, a son asked his father, what did you see in the Rebbe? You know what he responded? He says, the Rebbe was the first true gentleman that he ever met. Such a British answer. That's a good story. Not the biggest mystic, not the biggest holy man. He was a gentleman. I know as a British person, he meant that he was respectful towards his wife, that he was respectful towards the other in the most perfect way. And he, for sure, takes one to knows one. He must have had a certain sensitivity. When he saw that in the Rebbe, he says, I want to be part of this. How beautiful is that? That's holiness. Balance. And that's brachas. And that's true. This is an exercise. This is not a concept. If we practice this, I think it's going to transform the person's life. It's very difficult. It's difficult to get to know our good part. We minimize it. Most of us have very low self-esteem. It's bigger than you think, for sure in potential, but even in actual. And the same is on the opposite side. I think whoever gets one side distorted gets the other side distorted. It's a big avoida to separate them, to see each one for what it is. And then to keep that in your mind the whole time. So when you get, let's say, nasty or angry in that mood, at that time, look at a picture of yourself. I think that's a good way of doing it, like how to do it. Like, what's your angry face and what's your pleasant face? And whichever mood you're into, look at the other face. And take in a mirror and see your nasty, miserable, mean, v'chule. And just look at it. You'll crack up. I think you'll laugh. You'll see mamish two different people. Right? When you go shidduch dating for the people that are not married, that's the challenge. You meet one part of a person. They never present the other part, ever. Not even to themselves. So the whole dating is futile. You're meeting the wrong guy. You're not meeting the guy that you're marrying. So what do you do? I have no idea.
No.
And here, I want to tell you something. The nicer they are, the worse they are, based on this logic. Because they're zelo umazeh, it's balanced. The greatest people are the most horrible people. The most horrible people are the greatest people. Now, of course, externally, if the person is in the right neighborhood for 90% of the time, you can manage it. But at some point, you can't. And it's not about the other. It's about yourself. I think we all have to come to the point when we take a look at ourselves and we push it, break down. We have to get there. Legamre. Why? From the contradiction. There has to be a breakdown. This woman... The breakdown saved her life. A breakdown saves our lives from ourselves. If we're focusing on the other, vadai, we're on the wrong path because it has nothing to do with them. No matter how good or bad the other, has nothing to do with that. That's the wrong path. We have a wealthy side and we have a poor side. And God says, imach, keep them together. Whenever you feel wealthy, just look at your own poor. Whenever you feel poor, look at your wealth. And v'chai. And then you're going to have a whole different life. And we'll leave it at that. I'm